Good afternoon. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here at Global Patriot Radio on blogtalkradio.com. It is the first Wednesday in July. It is July 6th of 2022. A lot of stuff going on across the spectrum, sports, politics, the whole nine yards. But if you want to chime in, then it's really your choice. If you want to call in, 319-527-6706. You can do that all during the show. Anytime after or before the show or even during the show, you can email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Go over to Twitter and just type in @hpolysports. And I do have a Facebook page. I'm not real active on it, but what the heck. You can actually interact and listen to Global Patriot Radio every day here on blogtalkradio.com. Mondays from 6 p.m. Eastern Time till 8 p.m., you can listen to the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al. And then Tuesdays, you can listen to Eric with the Cross and Crescent discussion or dialogue. And that's at 6 p.m. Eastern Time also. Of course, we're here Wednesdays at 5:30, Hank Jones with Hank Jones Poly Sports. And then Thursdays, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report also at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Fridays, Conservative Casual Friday, that's Andrew Herod, usually around noon. And again, if you go to the, you know, the showrunner, the Global Patriot Radio, it'll tell you the schedule and tell you what's going on each day. Friday or a third, Saturday nights, the beautiful Christie joins Minister Usama Dakduk, revealing the truth about Islam. That goes from 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. And then Sundays, Eric's back, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Eric is back with Real Interfaith Dialogue, sort of a continuation of the Cross and Crescent discussion. There's other shows on Blog Talk Radio as well. Annie, Southern Sense Radio, Airways America, the Dave and Jeske Rock Show, Joseph Gibson, Tim Tapp. Check them all out. Chief, I think it's The Simple Life or Simple Things in Life on Tuesdays. It's a lot of good shows. But, of course, Global Patriot Radio is here every day for at least an hour to 2 hours. It's beautiful stuff. I'm here in Electric Hankland with my little Aussie and my wife. She's working over in Acoustic Hankland. Yeah, took a drive today. It's really hot here in Florida where I live, and took a drive today and took the Aussie with me, little Aussie. She's awesome as always, but she's just not. We're not, unless I get up at like 6 o'clock. I can't get outside to play frisbee with her or anything like that because it's just too damn hot. But she got to ride in the car. She was cool with that. So hey, what the heck. We of course have losses every week, but before I do get to those, let's welcome Indy Hawk KB and Boyd the Alaskan hanging out in the chat room. Hawkeye Mike is over on the phones listening in. A couple of those guys are going to join me later with some college football talk. But we do have some depth to report. Last Wednesday, we had two losses. We, or more accurately, the Hells Angels, lost one of their leaders, one of their most prominent figures since the debacle of the Altamont Free Concert. Remember that headlined by the Rolling Stones? It was sort of like an alternate, not an alternate, but Woodstock took place in the summer, and so the Stones weren't at Woodstock, but they did their Altamont Free Concert in California, December of 1969. It resulted in several deaths, including one at the direct hands of one of the Hells Angels. They'd been hired as stage security and paid in beer. Who thought that was a good idea? Anyway, Sonny Barger, age 83, passed away from cancer. He came to infamy when he appeared on several radio and TV programs after the concert to defend the violence and the near riot that his group caused. He continued to blame Mick Jagger and the Stones over the years. Yeah, this despite the fact they knocked out Jefferson Airplane, one of their lead singers, Marty Balin, before the Stones ever came on. Grateful Dead left. Do you remember the movie Gimme Shelter? Michael Shreve from Santana and Jerry Garcia and a couple others are talking about it, and they're like, and Jerry Garcia says, Hell's Angels is beating people? And if you remember, Paul Kantner comes on and says, yeah, I want to thank Hell's Angels for knocking out my lead singer, Marty Balin. Anyway, in addition to that, they kicked a nude, Barger himself claimed credit for kicking a nude, drugged up woman who was trying to get on stage. He later claims in his autobiography that he pushed some of this narrative. A lot of people say that they kind of killed the peace love movement. I don't know if that's true or not, but there are still some of those people around, frankly. Anyway, this guy sort of turned into a bad boy cult figure for his antics, both at the concert and his later interviews. But make no mistake, this guy was trouble. Now, he did time for drug violations, weapons violations, explosives. He also wrote a letter to President Lyndon Johnson in 1965, offering the services of he and several Hell's Angels as a crack group of trained guerrillas to operate behind enemy lines in Vietnam. Now, he actually did serve 14 months in the U.S. Army. He joined at age 16, but he was honorably discharged, forged his date of birth in order to be able to join. So I'm not exactly sure how he was qualified to lead a crack squad of guerrillas. But in any case, Sonny Barger did at 83. And then we also lost former NHLer Jimmy Papin at age 82. He won Stanley Cup titles with the Toronto Maple Leafs before being traded to my beloved Chicago Blackhawks, where he had his best years, at least in terms of statistics. He finished his career with the California Golden Seals, which for a very brief time became the Cleveland Barons. He later became a scout for the Blackhawks, as well as later the Blues and the Anaheim Ducks. Had a brief coaching stint in the IHL. He also owned a small stable of harness racing horses. He used some of those at his off-season hockey camps. Good player. I have fond memories of his time with the Blackhawks. He had a couple series-winning goals during his time with the Hawks. Not Stanley Cup finals, but playoff series. Thursday, we had several losses. Former multi-team NHLer Jean-Guy Gendron. I remember that. Guys on WGN trying to say that. Jean-Guy Gendron. He passed away in Canada at 87, medically assisted suicide. We also lost American YouTuber Technoblade, who passed away from metastasized cancer at age 23. And then finally, we lost Muriel Phillips at age 101. She was noted for her service during World War II as a nurse. It included a hospital near the front lines during the Battle of the Bulge. Thank her for her service as God takes her in his arms. Monday, on Independence Day, we lost sports journalist Hank Goldberg at age 82 to kidney failure and diabetes complications. Interesting side note, he dated Katie Couric for a time. Not sure I'd brag about it, but he did. So he worked mostly as an NFL and horse racing analyst and a handicapper for ESPN and CBS Sports, CBSSportsLander.com, as well as numerous local stations. His last on-radio appearance was for this year's Kentucky Derby. So rest in peace, folks. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center for messaging and call center services for your hospital or medical clinic or government agency, other information gathering services, real estate management. They do it all. Give them a call, 800-555-3738, or check them out online at alliancecommunications.com. They do employ remote staff. So if you are one who does not want to go back to the office, or you're a small business that will never go back to your office, you're a prime candidate as a client or as a potential employee. Some quickies. The Big Ten announced a blockbuster deal last week with news that two Pac-12 stalwarts, UCLA and USC, would be joining the Big Ten Conference in 2024. It's obviously sent some shockwaves through the sports world. Big Ten really becomes the first Power 5 conference to cover all four continental U.S. time zones, not to mention poaching two schools from a conference with which the Big Ten has had a decades-long Rose Bowl rivalry. I'll have some of the crew on for a longer discussion on the pluses and minuses, et cetera. Bill Gates has received approval from the state of North Dakota on his $13.5 million purchase farmland. Land is going to be leased back to farmers, so it is not corporate ownership. That is why it is okay, evidently. Dopey Joe calls for an end to the filibuster and that he will, quote, nationalize abortion law. I guess he doesn't understand what a Supreme Court ruling is, but anyway. It looks like, depending on where and whom you read, Georgia may indeed be investigating the election. Somehow it's been spun into an investigation of President Trump, naturally. And in a show of true conviction, Miami area conservative radio star Lourdes Ubieta, longtime broadcaster down there. It is an anti-communist conservative network, anti-Cuban communist, basically. It's called Radio Mambi. She has quit the network over the sale of the conservative network to a group headed by Uber scumbag George Soros, and which would be run and managed by former staffers of both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Good for her. That is true conviction. She was not going to stay around. She could have gotten a lot of money. She said, F this. I ain't doing it. Good on Lourdes Ubieta. So let's get to some news. West Virginia versus the EPA. Supreme Court basically says the EPA does not have the power to regulate emissions outside the fence, i.e. the EPA can regulate power plants and general protection of the environment, but the EPA has no authority, congressional or otherwise, to regulate the environment as a whole. This includes the Clean Power Plan, or CPP for short. In other words, bureaucratic regulation in the form of a deep state, per a great article in the Epoch Times. It's being reined in by conservative Supreme Court justices. Finally, let's read you some of that because it's I don't want to miss the good points. Basically, the court was very active and it toward the end of its term, so you can't get mad at that. Now, Justice Gorsuch wrote a concurring opinion that really pointed out a few things. One, that it's an unelected bureaucracy. It's not just the EPA, but there's all kinds of them within the executive branch. And Justice Gorsuch basically said that this is not what our Constitution was founded on. This is not what our country was founded on. And the problem is, of course, once it's there, how do you stop that? Well, it looks like some conservative justices are going to do that, and this is one of them. Here's what's happened. You got the Fed as an example. The Fed is this quasi-governmental agency, if you will. You've got like they follow the personal consumption expenditures, the producer price index or the consumer price index is what economists look at, not the Fed. They look at the personal consumption expenditures. Well, yeah, PCE blew itself up. The Fed, like the others, has proven itself to be biased and incompetent in some respects, just like the CDC. So guess what? Yeah, Justice Gorsuch, and he wasn't he did not write the majority opinion. He just wrote a concurring opinion, and basically said, no more. This is not what the framers intended. It's not constitutional. It's simply not. So when I say outside the fences, it means that. Power company, they can regulate energy companies for safety and energy companies for quote unquote inside the fences, stuff that they're doing at the level. But to go out and start saying that, fining and penalizing and prosecuting energy companies based on readings 50 miles into the stratosphere, no. The Supreme Court has said no, they don't have that authority. Congressional or otherwise. So that's good. That part of it is good. Now, there's some bad parts. Here's a summation on Wikipedia of West Virginia versus the EPA. And naturally, Wikipedia, while most of it is usually wiki jargon, there's a bit of progressive left bias there. They don't talk about, or they hardly talk about, in the summation of the case, they hardly talk about Judge Alito's opinion or Justice Gorsuch's. Actually, Chief Justice Roberts wrote the majority opinion. He rejected the EPA's argument that the case was moot because they say the CPP had been abandoned. He said the case is still alive unless it's absolutely clear that the allegedly wrongful behavior could not reasonably be expected to recur. And he said, yes, there is cause to review. President Biden's Justice Department or whoever said, no, we've abandoned the CPP. And he said, no, President Biden is on the record that he will vigorously defend that same approach. Court ruled they don't have the congressional authority to limit emissions through generation shifting to cleaner sources beyond the fence line. They can still regulate emissions at plants, but as has been pointed out elsewhere, plants are doing a lot of that themselves, cleaning themselves up. Here's what they pay a lot of attention to. This is Justice Kagan. I'm sure she's a fine person. I'm making it sound like Kagan's Breyer and Sotomayor. Out, by the way, as we know. But here's what she wrote. The subject matter of the regulation here makes the court's intervention all the more troubling. Whatever else this court may know about it, it does not have a clue about how to address climate change. And let's say the obvious. The stakes are high. Yet the court today prevents congressionally authorized agency action to curb power plants' carbon dioxide emissions. The court appoints itself, instead of Congress or the expert agency, the decision maker on climate policy. I cannot think of many things more frightening. Respectfully, I dissent. Well, she hit it there, and she doesn't even know it. The court doesn't have a clue about how to address climate change. You know why? Because from a man-made standpoint, it doesn't exist. Boyd in the chat room points out at the bottom of each law Congress passes, a paragraph states that the agency SIC is to write and produce regulation to enforce the law. This gives them the authority to change the intent of the law via regulation, and that needs to be ended. He's absolutely right. But it boils back to this, though, really, and it's a deep state question. This is not a country that was founded on the principles of, or in its constitution, for handpicked, appointed, unelected bureaucrats to make law. It was not founded on courts, justices, judges legislating from the bench. Congress makes laws. President approves or signs off on the laws. The court rules, when in question, on the constitutionality of laws. So what we're seeing, hopefully, and we've seen it elsewhere, we saw it with Roe versus Wade, we're seeing maybe a shift away from deep state bureaucracy type governance back to actual republic type governance, or at least democracy. I keep saying republic. We were founded as a republic. We are a bicameral democracy, any way you look at it. Let's get to Stacey Abrams. 102 Georgia sheriffs issued a statement slamming Democrat governor candidate Stacey Abrams. At issue is her support, both overtly and covertly, of soft-on-crime policies, which include movements to defund police, bail and release perpetrators of violent crime. And she sits on the board and profits from a Seattle-area nonprofit that supports some of these organizations. And here are the organizations, because I did save this article, because I don't believe in just, trying to make them up. Okay, so basically, the statement supports Republican Governor Brian Kemp, incumbent governor, criticizes her for advancing the defund the police movement through her board membership from a far-left Seattle-based grant-making group, which the sheriffs called anti-police. She's repeatedly shown complete disdain for law enforcement and the risk we take every day, putting our lives on the line to serve our community. It's communities. It's a big race this year. Now, here's the thing. In 2018, Kemp won by about 54,000 votes. Of course, Abrams went on and on about how it was, you know, voter suppression, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, the organization is called the Marguerite Casey Foundation. They have been a vocal supporter of hashtag abolish the police, hashtag defund the police. They, in their financial filings from 2020, they've given grants to the Movement for Black Lives and the Louisville Community Bail Fund. Now, I'm not going to argue that they can give money away. It's their money to give away. But, yeah, when a governor gubernatorial candidate is part of a group that makes grants in that direction and or is paid for being on that board, well, that's kind of problematic since, you know, defend the Constitution, so help me God. Remember that part? Yeah, Stacey Abrams, don't see her really living up to that vow, should she ever. I don't think I'm saying anything new here, but Stacey Abrams is one of those who lives for and embodies Big Left. She worked under former Atlanta Mayor Maynard Jackson. She interned at the EPA, yes, the very same EPA that just got smacked down by the Supreme Court. And, you know, it's funny. While she all but gave glowing reviews to the Georgia election process in 2020, remember, she railed against it in her loss to Governor Kemp in the 2018 election. She is saying, again, that the GOP has suppressed minority voters with the election reform law passed in Georgia in 2021. And she even campaigned for Major League Baseball to relocate the 2021 Major League Baseball All-Star Game from Atlanta, which ended up being to Denver, before being exposed. Remember, she was exposed. She backtracked, and she pretended to advocate for keeping the game in Georgia. Here's the thing, though. Voters aren't as stupid as she thinks, and voters are becoming less loyal to skin color and blanket party ideology. I know it's not happening overnight, but it is happening. In this election cycle, despite claims by news aggregators like Yahoo and HuffPost or whatever, that the race is a dead heat, almost every credible poll finds her behind by at least 5%. The same crackpot polls, by the way, said Raphael Warnock was ahead of Herschel Walker in the Senate race, anywhere from 5 to 8 points. Credible polls, again, have it as a dead heat, statistical dead heat. Welcome, Vito, to the chat room. Vito, you're probably wondering why I'm appearing twice in the chat room. I did that because in case you came on and you talked under the Global Patriot, I could talk under Hank and whatnot. So anyway. So, and the kicker here, by the way, the supposedly suppressed voters, they showed up for Georgia primaries in record numbers. You are hearing that correctly. The claims that election reform would suppress voters did nothing of the kind. You know why? People who want to vote will vote. That's never been the problem. The problem is when loser candidates are also corrupt candidates and hence have no qualms about cheating in order to win. It isn't about their message resonating. Big Left and those who are part of it continually seeking to satiate their eternal lust for power and control. Bottom line. Okay, next. Members of the White House Press Corps issued a statement and sent a letter. This is really funny. Over Biden's refusal, Dopey Joe's refusal to meet with them. Said they issued a scathing statement bemoaning, quote, the historic lack of access to the president, revealing that they have to go through all these hoops to gain access to what previous administrations offered freely. Like 68 of them. You know, all this talk about Stacey Abrams makes me want to go to a smorgasbord tonight. I'm not going to say it on air, but you would be cracking up if you heard what I had sitting on a plate waiting for me when the show is over. Says the current method of allowing limited number of reporters into the events is not only restrictive and antithetical to the concept of a free press, but it has been done without any transparent process into how reporters are selected to cover these events. Notable signees, Caitlin Collins, Ed O'Keefe, Jackie Heinrich, Kevin Cork, Stephen Portnoy. These organizations, here are the few of them, those represent CNN, Fox News, White House Press Correspondents Association. I can tell them where to look when it comes to blame. Here's where. The Mirror. These people have protected more Democrat presidents and presidential candidates, senators, representatives, governors, etc., than any of us could ever count. These people have willfully ignored blatant corruption and criminal conduct. They spin what they can't hidden. They enlist their lapdogs to help sway public opinion when it's necessary. There are egregious examples, of course. My personal favorite, during the Clinton-Lewinsky scandal, if you remember that, CNN recruited Sidney Biddle Barrows. She's also known as the Mayflower Madam. Remember that? They had her on to explain, quote, the why of Bill Clinton's inability to keep his hands and his crank off any woman that crossed his path. You heard that right. You heard that right. CNN brought onto their set a woman who, in essence, was a glorified pimp to tell us all that Bill Clinton had these quote-unquote urges because he was a powerful man with seemingly limitless amounts of testosterone, and thus forgiveness was to be the prevailing response of the day. That far, I don't think. Don't be surprised when one of these eventually trots out the recently released John Hinckley Jr. to explain the rationale behind the next mass shooting. I'm dead serious here, folks. I really am. These people have no shame. Don't be surprised when they bring out John Hinckley Jr. as a commentator on a mass shooting. That's what it's coming to. They literally have no shame. But back to the current issue here. Simply put, they protected Dopey Joe for the entire campaign. Remember when Gillibrand and Mayor Pete and Feel the Burn all dropped out? All of them after successful primary days, by the way. Big media was quick to sweep the oddities of a Biden surge under the rug. Why? Because there was no real Biden surge. The fact was, like I said, there was no Biden surge. That says a hell of a lot. But they went the full measure. They discredited stories about Hunter Biden and his laptop. They used fake medical experts to tell us that Dopey Joe was fit as a fiddle. They pretended to trot out Chris Wallace as a debate moderator rather than his actual role, which was acting as Dopey Joe's onstage campaign manager. They continue to claim that any and all discoveries, credible ones, of illicit activity surrounding the 2020 presidential election, they said they're being put forth basically by a lunatic fringe. Yet they're all but assisting in the prosecution and persecution of anyone present on January 6, 2021. Actually, they're assisting in tracking down any potential insurrectionists. I mean, media footage is being fed to the FBI to try to help identify some of these people. Yeah, I put a heavy air quote around insurrectionists, by the way. So, yeah, they have protected this moron. They have campaigned for this moron. They have run cover for this moron. They have lied for and about this moron. And yet they complain of, quote, no access. God, man, they helped perpetrate this mess, and now they want access. Were it not for actual journalists and truth seekers, we wouldn't even know who shot Ashley Babbitt or stomped Roseanne Boyland. They continue to put forth the argument, by the way, that Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick was killed by the mob during the event, which is, of course, not true. And they pretty much ignore the other two Capitol Police officers that subsequently committed suicide, other, of course, than to blame it on Trump or even more absurdly, point the finger at PTSD. They don't question the lack of response by police or Plastic Pelosi's refusal to have National Guard troops on site. They don't question the fact that of the people on the law enforcement side who have died, none have been from actual injuries sustained in the events of 1-6-21. They've lionized Dr., and that's some double air quotes, Dr. Jill Biden. They gleefully ignored the lids that would be placed on the daily events by the Biden campaign. They somehow found the energy to lambaste and campaign against President Trump on an almost continual basis. And even in this thing, when they point out that they have much better access to President Trump, they still had to sort of stay true to form by pointing out that although they had access to President Trump, they didn't enjoy the best of relationships. Yeah, no kidding. You literally, people, you had no problem protecting people like Kathy Griffin, who held an effigy of the bloody head of President Trump in her hand, or Peter Fonda, may he rest in peace, who put forward the idea of putting Barron Trump, then 11 years old, into cages with pedophiles. He thus explained, without knowing, of course, the very reason children are separated from parents and other adults at immigration detention centers. But that's part of the problem with big media. Only after Fonda's tweet was reported to the Secret Service did he even apologize. And only after he apologized did big media even comment on any of it. And yep, today, certain sectors of and people of big media and big left are trying to rehabilitate Kathy Griffin's public image, of course. So no, big media, I don't empathize with your, quote, lack of access. You helped create America's version of the frigging Politburo. And for that, guess what? You get the same quality of access as Pravda or any European news service. You get what they want you to get. Deal with it, because you played a large part in its creation. God. That there are 68 people who are complaining about that. That's 68 people who should be grateful. Like, yeah, I don't have to cover this moron. This moron ain't letting me in. No sweat here. I'm happy. No, these people are complaining. From AmericanLibertyNews.com comes this uplifting story of how New York State and New York City will abide or not by the decision of the Supreme Court's recent decision that held that the states may issue provisions were an unconstitutional violation of Second Amendment rights. The state legislature was to meet in a special session to hammer out yet more laws and provisions that will continue to violate the Second Amendment rights of lawful, law-abiding gun owners and citizens. Here are some highlights, and I will obliterate each one of them item by item. One, requiring 15 hours of in-person training at a firing range. Okay, folks, in essence, the legislature either wants to hire people to conduct this training, in other words, spend money, or more likely, they want to put up a financial roadblock. If you can find someone able to do 15 hours of training, great. If you can pay for it, well, basically, you can't. The cost would be 3 to 5 times the cost of the average gun, depending on the type of gun you're buying. Yeah, pay for 15 hours of training. Here's another one. Sit down for an in-person interview. Well, I'll say this. It's definitely one that gets state employees work, air quotes. Beyond that, kind of creates a subjective in-person test that puts gun ownership at the whims of a lazy-ass union-protected bureaucrat. No thanks. Look how long it takes to get a damn driver's license. And you're supposed to get an interview scheduled with some bureaucratic moron. Here's the next one. Provide social media accounts. Yeah, so much for the First Amendment. I mean, you know, since we're disregarding the Supreme Court on the Second Amendment, I guess no sense being consistent. I mean, did the recent Supreme Court decision not give you folks any clue? Privacy, right? Provide contact information for household members. Yeah, sure. Why not get what will no doubt become a stream of red flag filings? Get them in place now. Find out who they need to have a little info on, and voila, we have the names already inserted on the forums. Don't be surprised, folks, if we see red flag claims made by the same people who vote in Chicago, i.e. red flag claims made by the dead. Here's another one. Renew their license after 3 years. What the hell? Did you not read the decision from the Supreme Court? They basically said this is part of the criteria that made your law unconstitutional in the first place. Here's one. Monthly background checks. Really? At whose expense? Jesus, you're a state drowning in financial burden. You lose part of your tax base on an hourly basis now. You're trying to get rid of police forces, but now you have the means to conduct monthly background checks? God, if Hitler were alive today, he'd be lamenting just how far he could have gone if he'd had the internet at his disposal. Good God. As a sort of an afterthought, it sets up an appeals process. In other words, yeah, we already intend to either confiscate guns or prevent viable ownership of same. Yeah, folks, this appeals process will pretty much be similar to the court trial that Charlton Heston's character had in Planet of the Apes, i.e. not exactly pro-defendant. Yeah, I say defendant because this is what the state of New York is assuming under this scenario. Literally. I'm not even sure where to go with that. It's just, I mean, you read it, and I'm going through these things so that I can have a little rebuttal, and it's, I can't get my head around. Mike's going to be on later when we talk the football stuff. I wish, though, that I had a bunch of time to show this. Okay, here's a good one. Eric Adams, the mayor, said, we lost a 20-year-old woman on the Upper East Side of New York tonight. She was pushing a stroller when a gunman took her life. Somebody pointed out, he says, more guns in our city means more lives lost. Somebody pointed out, yeah, you didn't even want a 20-year-old woman to be allowed to own a gun. Yeah, he blames guns as the epidemic of gun violence, of course. New York Governor Kathy Hochul started making claims. Here's one. Here's a question she got. Said, do you have the numbers to show that it's the concealed carry permit holders that are committing crimes? Here's an answer. Remember, this is the party of science. This is the party of science. She said, I don't need to have numbers. I don't need to have a data point to say this. I know that I have a responsibility for this state to have sensible gun safety laws. Based on what? I mean, science, remember? We have literally gone backwards. In the time that I first came onto this network, I was railing for a while on Second Amendment stuff because there were still people out there. I didn't think I'd have to be and yet these shootings are happening on the watch of a Democrat Congress and a Democrat executive branch. And then when they can't get gun laws passed, they blame the minority party and the filibuster. It doesn't occur to them that maybe the blame falls squarely on the fact that they want to create gun laws that are unconstitutional. It's not that difficult. It's just not that difficult. By the way, it should be noted the Supreme Court reversed four other appeals court decisions that upheld various gun laws in California, Hawaii, Maryland, and New Jersey, which is sort of a piggyback to their overturning California's or New York's ban. Now, I'm sure they all went 6-3, but that should tell you something. When an amendment to our Constitution that's in our Bill of Rights, it's called the Second Amendment, but it's part of our Bill of Rights. My buddy, mine and Mike's one of our former roommates, who was definitely left of us, even he says the Bill of Rights is sacrosanct. It's either all encompassing or it doesn't exist if you obliterate any part of it. So finally, this is from Stephen Moore. It popped up on youramericannews.com. It's a fantastic article on why Dopey Joe is the economy's supply chain problem. He said, Joe Biden has become America's "it's not my fault" president. Whether it's the inflation, the border, the crime, the gas prices, the Afghanistan exit fiasco, or the stock market collapse, Dopey Joe has become an expert at pointing the finger at someone else. His presidency so far reminds me of the famous campaign slogan of then New York Mayor David Dinkins, who admitted that everything was going wrong on his watch and confessed, "I'm doing the best I can." And as this guy points out, New Yorkers believed him. And wisely, they tossed him out for Rudy Giuliani, who actually fixed things. Now he says, take the supply chain crisis. He constantly blames shortages, empty shelves, and back orders of everything from cars to tampons to baby formula on supply chain disruptions. For example, a new car these days, probably have to wait weeks or even months, or pay a $5,000 to $20,000 above sticker price premium to get it immediately. As he said, I don't recall having these supply problems when Trump was president. Do you? One of the most remarkable business innovations of the last 40 years has been, quote, just-in-time inventory management. It's a logistical triumph of the economy that cut prices, ensured full shelves at places like grocery stores and Walmarts, and then digital age companies such as FedEx, UPS, and Amazon reliably deliver merchandise to your door. So he says, why is it just now that we are confronted with the goblins of supply chain disruptions? Biden says it is because we had the economy shut down, and then Trump left him with an economy in miserable shape. According to this narrative, Biden had to, quote, build back better, fondly call it bilk back bigger, and solve bottlenecks with cargo ships, airlines, warehouses, and factories. But that's not even close to the truth. The economy soared out of the COVID shutdowns that had paralyzed the economy in early 2020. In the second half of 2020, the economy snapped back with a rapid rebound. These were the last 6 months of the Trump presidency. There were few shortages or delays, except when companies couldn't get workers back because of sky-high welfare and unemployment benefits. Prices were stable in the first 6 months of the COVID recovery. When Trump left office, inflation was 1.5%. Even though the economy grew by about 20% in the 6 months before he left office. But then when Biden took over, right from the get-go, here, there, and everywhere, supply chain problems emerged. Why? First, he declared war on the American fossil fuel industry, so it began to contract output. Prices soared. Then he appointed regulators who made anti-business climate change rules that disrupted commerce flows. And finally, he appointed people to key positions in his administration who were woefully unqualified for the task at hand. Kamala Harris, his vice president, was in charge of securing the border, and this was like a monographed invitation to illegal immigrants to come on over. Next, Pete Buttigieg was put in charge of transportation. He seems like a very nice man, but he went on paternity leave amid the cargo shipping crisis and took no practical steps to alleviate the jam up at the ports. With airlines canceling thousands of flights and leaving passengers stranded in strange cities, Mayor Pete is flunking again. People in the airline industry are starting to call the transportation secretary pass the buck Buttigieg. As aviation analyst Gary Leff of the influential View from the Wing blog puts it, while Buttigieg is scolding airlines over their operational performance, he is partly responsible for the problem and isn't actually doing things within his power to help fix it. He's acting a lot like his boss. In sum, the supply chain problems and high inflation aren't going away because no one in this administration knows anything about logistics, business, commerce, or fixing things. The Committee to Unleash Prosperity did a Google test to see how often people search for the term supply chain problems. Sure enough, the searches weren't too common for any of the 20 years before Biden was inaugurated. Then, almost from the month that he was sworn in, the number of searches quadrupled. Coincidence? Perhaps Biden, the man who blames everyone else for his failed presidency, is the real source of the supply chain problem. Maybe to get the great American economic engine running smoothly again, he needs to be replaced. Yeah, that one's a little bit Like, yeah, I already knew that. But so that's my ranting and stuff for today. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. And Indy Hawk, who is in the chat room right now, but better be ready to call in, Indy Hawk and Hawkeye Mike, who is also on the phones, we are going to talk about the blockbuster news in last week's college football world or college sports world. The Big Ten acquiring, if you will, two very high-profile and powerful programs from another conference. So we will be back in about, well, if you're looking at my song list, 2 minutes and 10 seconds. Be right back, folks.
Bethard sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith.
Oh, he got it! Smith! Touchdown, 85 yards! Iowa! C.J. Bethard!
Okay, I just had to play that. That, of course, is the Big Ten Championship game of 2015. C.J. Bethard to Yvon Smith and Gus Johnson's amazing call. So I got some guys on the line joining. Mike, you there?
I'm here. How you doing, Hank?
Good, good, good. Indy, are you on?
I'm here, Hank. How you doing?
Good, sir. How are you? And I brought in T. Bodie. I just saw that he dialed in. T. Bodie, you there?
Oh, you need me on here?
If you want to be. If you don't want to be, I'll kick you off.
I'll listen and chime in. You got it.
Okay. 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 So last week we received news that the Big Ten is expanding in 2024. USC and UCLA are joining the Big Ten. So I'll start with Mike. Like or dislike?
I guess I have kind of mixed emotions. I mean, I think overall it's something that we need that needed to be done in the current, status or the current kind of mode of college football now. But it's, I kind of like the old days of the conference being more regional and just, the way the Big Ten used to be.
Yeah.
But I think those days are gone, so the Big Ten has to look out for itself. So, I think the overall feeling is, from what I'm getting, is that people are pretty excited about it. So
yeah.
Let's hope it works out, and Southern Cal maybe gets some of their past glory back, and that'll be good for the conference.
Yeah. Indy, how about you?
Yeah, I really like it. I think Mike hit it on the head. It's a changing landscape. It's a new environment. But I know when we talked about this a few months back, Hank, you had us on. I listed USC and UCLA as the two I'd like to see the Big Ten go after. So I think hopefully it's going to work out really well. I know it's a huge financial boom. I mean, number two TV market, only behind New York. So there'll be a lot of money coming in to help, you know, other programs. So.
Yeah, I think, you know, I liken it to this. As you know, I'm a Kiwanis member. I know I don't have a secret handshake or anything, but in 1987, the Supreme Court had basically told Rotary that they had to allow women, Rotary International. So Kiwanis, rather than sit around on their hands, they made the decision then to openly say, we are admitting women now. And, you know, while half of our club that I'm in, half of the club was saying, this is stupid, and the other side was saying, you know, this isn't about whether or not it's good. The fact is, it's here. What we need to do now is go after the best, most qualified potential members, you know, of the female, you know. I mean, so that's what it becomes, you know, that's what it boils down to is that. So, Indy, I'll ask you this first. Kevin Warren, power broker or pawn in this whole process?
I don't know. I think he responded well. I mean, you know, the SEC kind of drew first blood. They would go get Texas and Oklahoma, so that's the changing landscape. So, you know, Big Ten has to respond as far as, you know, if you're a top two conference. But I think, you know, the SEC has not had the revenue that the Big Ten has. The Big Ten is closing the gap, and I think this is a heck of an answer. And I'm hoping, you know, when we talked before, I was very hopeful that Notre Dame would be in there too. And it sounds like
hold off on Notre Dame. That's going to be our last question probably, because I just don't see, you know, I that's going to be a discussion for everyone. So, Mike, what do you think? You think Kevin Warren was instrumental, or do you think he was just doing what the presidents and chancellors told him to do?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know for sure, but I think that, you know, we've kind of been critical of Kevin Warren for a lot of things, so maybe you need to give him some credit I think this was handled real well from the Big Ten perspective, but it sounds like from the reports I'm getting that this was UCLA-USC approaching the Big Ten, not the other way around. But the Big Ten then embraced it eagerly and quickly. And they were able to basically keep it a secret till it was done. I think it happened pretty quickly. But, you know, I agree with Indy Hawk on this, that, you know, this was something that was coming, you know, something like this. I was surprised. But I think overall, the upsides here are really big for, like, say, bringing in the LA market. I know that Paul Feinbaum, Mr. SEC, says that this was a huge deal, and I respect that guy's opinion. So I'll agree with him.
Okay, Mike, I'm going to ask you this one first, and just say yes or no, and I'll tell you. You know, we'll get further, but so yes or no? Do you think the Big Ten's done yet?
Quick question. You mean like in the
media? Do you think something more's coming, or do you think it's we think we're holding pat for now?
I think we're holding pat for now, but I'm not 100% positive on that.
Yeah, Andy, what do you think? You think we're done, or do you think this is just the beginning for the, you know, let's say, I don't want to say immediate future, like next month, but in the next year, do you think we're done or not?
I think we're done, dependent on Notre Dame. If Notre Dame says yes, then I think we go to 18 or who knows, 20. Okay. I just hope it doesn't.
Yeah, no, I agree with that actually too.
Yeah. So let's take Notre Dame off the table still. Assuming that we are still in expansion mode, Indy, where do you think they're going? Do you think they're going into the Big 12? Do you think they're sticking with the Pac-12? Do you think they got specific teams they're going after?
Well, I think if you've got to do it, I think they're going about it the right way. You know, they got five of the seven largest metro areas. I looked this up as far as markets. So Stanford would be a huge get if you just look at that side of it. Yeah. But the other pack, you know, they're talking a lot about Oregon and Washington, but I like Stanford, both academically, plus also the market there with the San Jose, you know, San Francisco area.
Yeah. And Mike, what do you think? You think it's that way, or do you think they start looking at maybe an Oklahoma State or?
I think it's more like Indy Hawk says that they're looking at a couple other West Coast teams potentially. Stanford, Washington, Oregon are the three. I doubt any others, but you know, I tell you also Washington, you get the Seattle market, which is a pretty big market too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you get Washington and Oregon as an example, you suddenly have state schools within the Big Ten that don't even look liberal anymore. I mean, Iowa City, which let's make no mistake about it.
Yeah.
Hell, Madison, obviously, Iowa City and Madison suddenly look like very, very homespun, almost centrist campuses, comparatively speaking. I mean, that's just, you know, to me, that would be amazing. So, okay, so knowing that, okay, let's say whatever direction, Michael, I'll start with you on this one. Do we do new divisions or do we scrap the divisions altogether?
Well, I think I liked what the SEC is doing with 16. So let's assume that we're going to be at 16 here, at least for the next couple of years, because it'll be different if we go higher. What they're doing, and I think works, is getting rid of divisions, which I like. And you have three rivals. So for us, for instance, it'd probably be Minnesota, Wisconsin, and maybe Nebraska, maybe someone else. And you play them every year. And that means then that so besides those other three, there are 12 other teams. And you play half of them each year for non-conference games, which means that you would play everybody at least once every other year. So I kind of like that. I like that, doing that. When you get in the divisions, and it's look what's happened. We're playing Ohio State this October. It's the first time we've played them in 5 years, and I just think that really sucks. So I kind of like that idea and get rid of the divisions. Now, if we go higher than that, then I think if it gets up to 18 or 20, then you become, once you cross the 16 line, I think you go into these mega conference type things, and then you got divisions and pods or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's the only way it works. At 16, you can do this, I think.
Okay. What do you think, Indy? You like the idea, or would you rather do divisions and westernize part of it?
Yeah, I like what Mike's talking about there. The one thing on the staying at 16, I will say the G in the big logo looks like a 6. It could be easily made into a 6. So that's a nice number there for the marketing group.
That's true.
But
that is true.
I really want to retain the Wisconsin, Minnesota, Nebraska. And if we can get a rivalry with Rutgers, just make sure we have them on our schedule. That'd be just fantastic.
I'd like to keep Northwestern in there. I'd like to keep Northwestern in there because that's an away game. That's an away game that you have no problem getting into. You know what I mean? I mean, that's like if you can't get an Iowa City ticket during the year, you can go to Evanston and damn near walk in. I mean, we ordered our tickets when we went last time, but I mean, you can walk in. You know, I mean, you can. The only question is, do you take the time to go get your ticket first, or you go over to Mustard's Last Stand and make sure you get in line for a hot dog? I mean, that's, you know, Vito asks a good question in the chat room. Would the Pac-12 dissolve? I mean, we'll get to that. Okay. Do we see this? Indy, I'll start with you. Do you see this? I mean, is this dominoes? Is the Big Ten or the Big 12 and the Pac-12 looking at merging? Is Big 12 regretting? This is a big part. Okay, this is a two-part. Will this be dominoes? And the first one is, do you see like a Big 12, Pac-12 merging of the remainder? And on top of that, do you see the Big 12 regretting the hell out of the additions that they just added last year?
I just read an article that the Big 12's already reached out to the, you know, Pac-10 or whatever they are, Pac-12.
Right.
They're going to do whatever they can. It's a free for all now. You got to move quickly, but I don't know.
You said,
do you think
with those recent additions, though, Houston, UCF, Brigham Young, and Cincinnati, do you think that throws a kink into it or not?
I mean, I don't know. This is anybody's guess at this point. I mean, it's kind of gets, you know, like we went through this before. It's just everybody free-for-all kind of a thing. And
yeah.
But, yeah, I would think they would, because now you've got the Pac-12 teams that are sitting there, some pretty good programs to be picked up, and they've already – so it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Mike, how about you? What's your thought? I mean, you see merging that direction? Do you see maybe the Big 12, if they get – you know, because if Big 12, Pac-12 were to merge – now, without UCF, Houston, and all that, that's still not a bad merger. So, Mike, do you think at that point, if they could get the rest of them, you think they'd be figuring out a way to kick those other four to the curb or not?
I doubt they'd kick them to the curb, because I think, you know, they're in the conference, right? I don't, you know, it would be unprecedented to kick them out. My brother, who's a huge Iowa State fan, has been following all this Big 12, Pac-12, you know, what's going on there pretty closely. So he's been calling me a lot to talk about this. And I know nothing. I'm just taking in what he's saying. He's going on there reading all these Twitters, you know, from people supposedly in the know. But it's all speculation. According to him, that there was talk of an actual merger with the other 10, but that they couldn't quite work things out. But that, according to him, the Arizona schools, Utah, and Colorado have sounded out the Big 12. I don't know that they've actually done formal applications about bringing them in to make a 16-team conference. Whether it would go beyond that, I don't know. But as far as, like, you know, the regret of bringing in the other four, well, you know, the Central Florida, Cincinnati, Houston, and BYU – I don't know. I don't think that's the case, but I would point out that the spread of that conference, if it encompassed these four Pac-12 schools or some other Pac-12 schools, wouldn't be any longer than Big Ten is now, which goes from L.A. to the New York metro area with Rutgers, or the Washington area with Maryland. So that's just the wave of the future. You know, we're probably heading toward three mega conferences of a super Division One, with, you know, SEC, Big Ten, and the rest, you know. So I kind of envision that maybe a decade or so before we get there, but I think that it's kind of moving that way.
Okay. So let me follow you up with this one then. With this announced, remember, if it's for 2024, do you think Texas and Oklahoma make an earlier bolt for the SEC?
I think it could happen. I don't know if there's I think the big thing is the scheduling complications. 2024 would only be a year ahead of when they're scheduled to go in. So
I think
there is kind of an impetus to try to get it done. The Big Ten's shown they can add in Southern Cal and UCLA in, you know, by 2024. My understanding is that you know, and it'll be a headache for the Big Ten too, that having to rejigger all the schedules.
Yeah.
It's not as easy as you might think.
Andy, what are you thinking in that regard?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of legalities of all that, and the contracts and the TV rights. But, yeah, I think that's, you know, what Mike said is accurate, that you got to do the scheduling. There's a whole lot of complications with it. I'm sure they'd like to go, though. Sooner the better.
But from the TV rights perspective, you know, that's not a bad – you know, the TV – in this case, the TV networks now suddenly have a little bit of leverage, believe it or not, because they can say, look – is this merger happening or isn't it? It's really not happening until 2025, then there's no reason for us to talk right now. You know, maybe. I don't know. T. Bodie put his hand up, so I'm going to bring him in, but we're getting feedback from you. But, T., what's your thought?
Well, real quick, I think that you're going to see the Big 12 and the Pac-12 come together real quick. They don't have a choice, because otherwise they're left out. Like Hawkeye Mike says, is they will end up – being everybody else And if they have a third conference, now the ACC will eventually blend in with the SEC and some will get left out, I think. But you'll have I think you're going to have three mega conferences, 20 teams in each. And that's where I'm at. And I don't think Big is going to do anything until they hear from Notre Dame. But I think you're going to see, just because they're feeling left out, you know, yes, I think they got those four teams and they feel good about that. But think about this. If they pick up all the other West Coast, they already got Brigham Young. If they pick up these other West Coast teams, that gives them a TV footprint across the entire country as well.
Yeah. It gives them, a, you know, that if that comes together, that actually becomes a very, that becomes a damn good conference, actually.
Yeah, especially if they get Oregon and Washington in.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a damn good conference. Speaking of which, what the hell is the ACC? Mike, I'll start with you on this. What the hell is the ACC thinking at this point? Remember we had this alliance with the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 to sort of combat this? What's the ACC thinking right now, do you think?
Well, that's interesting. The alliance is pretty much a dead letter now. It's like, you know, on the way of the typewriter. But I think that the ACC's, there's some, it's got some difficulties. I think Clemson and Florida State, maybe Miami and Florida, are probably itching to try to do something with the SEC. The problem is they've got a legal, my understanding is they've got a legal problem with these grant of rights matters.
Yeah.
That are making it very difficult for them to leave. I don't know if they go out to maybe like 2030 or something like that.
Yeah, 2035.
And so they would have to get the other, they have to get the cooperation of the other ACC members, which would have no incentive to let them go. So, you know, we'll have to see how that works out. But there's complicating factors in the ACC. But I think if you're in the ACC, you're probably pretty nervous. And I think maybe the SEC might be a little nervous, to tell you the truth, too, because they can't just go and start coaching ACC teams, I don't think, right away.
Right. And what do you think? Where do you think SEC goes if they go on another – do you think they go on another raid? Do you think the SEC is getting ready to go on another raid, and where do they go?
Where do they go? Yeah, where would they raid? That's my question.
That's what I'm saying. Indy, what do you think? I mean, do you think they go on another raid?
You run the risk of diluting your conference as far as who you're playing, how often you play them. Okay, if you have a 24-team conference, that's great. But if you're playing, you know, you've got two top 10 teams, two top five programs, and they play each other once every 8 years, what's the use? So your comment about the Big 12 and all those programs they added, they do have to be looking at, wow, what do we do with these guys? You know, because they're not higher-end programs, but it's a hard decision for sure.
Boyd made a good comment in the chat room. He says, I don't care about the conferences as long as Ohio, Michigan is being played. other than Army Navy, he really makes a good point. Other than Army Navy, there's no bigger game in college football. I'm sorry, I don't care. You can say Georgia, Florida, and you can say there's no bigger game in college football than Ohio State, Michigan still to this day. I'm sorry, anybody that disagrees with that, but it's just the fact. I mean, it still pulls in, you know, TV. It still pulls, you know, obviously the stadiums are full for that. So, you know, okay, let's get to it. Indy, you start this off. Notre Dame, what are we waiting? Are they waiting? What do you think is going to happen?
I mean, I don't understand. They have to go, I think. I mean, they make about $15 million on their TV deal, from what I understand. It could be, you know, the money is there. I know quarterback Brady Quinn came out and said, hey, it's time for Notre Dame to go.
Yeah.
So it's just all kinds of politics. I mean, I read some guy talking about in the 1800s or the 1900s, whatever the heck it was, you know, the Big Ten dissed Notre Dame, Michigan, and whatever, some crap like that. I'm like, are you kidding me? But who knows? There's all that kind of political stuff. We want to be an independent. Okay, great. Notre Dame has to get somewhere. I mean, I don't think they can go as an independent, but
yeah,
I've said that for a while. Recruiting.
Yeah,
speech.
And I think a college football playoff committee under a new, you know, under a two or three, you know, a three or four super conference scenario without Notre Dame, I don't think they get the same place at the table that they've had. I mean, Mike, what's your thought on that?
Notre Dame has played Michigan, Michigan State. They've played Purdue. They play USC every year. So just another carrot for the Big Ten. They're all right there. So.
Yeah. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, well, you know, that's right. I mean, Southern Cal, do they have a bigger rival does Notre Dame have a bigger rival in Southern Cal football? I don't know. But
I would,
hard
to argue. Yeah. So,
there's something about it that Notre Dame has had an aversion to wanting to deal with the Big Ten for, it seems like, you know, forever. I don't know exactly. I mean, you can speculate. Is it they think that, you know, like Indy Hawk mentioned that sometime way back when the Big Ten acted in a anti-Catholic way or something like that? Or is it, which I used to kind of think more recently, that they just get beat up too much in the Big Ten, so they don't really want to go there. And, you know, that's why they dropped Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, who they used to play every year until a few years ago. And then all of a sudden that ended. And, you know, so, I mean, it seems like they're a natural fit in the Big Ten, but it's always seemed that way. And yet they never wanted to do it. And when they've had to sort of affiliate with anybody, it's been like the ACC.
Yeah. Indy made a point about their TV deal, which is with NBC. And to give you an idea, NBC via Peacock is one of the schools looking at picking up Big Ten games. So I think they, you know, Notre Dame has to see that writing on the wall that, my God, we're not even exclusive on NBC if this happens. So, you know, there's that. But here's the positive side of it. You know, if Notre Dame joins the Big Ten, you know, Big Ten Network has all these classic, you know, classic games and stuff. We could see a weekly feature on the Big Ten Network of classic Notre Dame football highlights, you know, with like Lindsey Nelson. You guys hearing me?
Moving to further action in the third quarter.
Yeah, exactly. Moving to a later series of downs. And, you know, for a while, Notre Dame sucked bad enough that it was like, okay, moving to the fourth quarter, you know, and the things start at 10 o'clock, and by 10:12, it's like we're moving to the fourth quarter, and then they spend the last whatever doing who knows what. But, you know, that's – you know, you do pick that up. They would pick up – I mean, they would pick up all that Notre Dame library. Think about it, on the Big Ten Network. That would be huge. Would be huge. Yep. So Mike,
you want
to start?
I wonder what happened to those old shows. You know, I mean, it's like they must be in the can somewhere.
Some not. I mean, if you look on Big Ten Network, they still have some of those, like the best of 1957, as an example, and they'll play all these. Yeah. You know, they'll sort of run down. So I imagine, like, some of that, they have some of it, some of it's gone. I mean, WGN, you know, had all this old stuff like Bozo Circus and the Ray Rayner Show. Most of that's gone. Most of that they just re-recorded over stuff on, you know, before things technologically got to the point where that wasn't an issue. But, you know, so I imagine, you know, some of it could be gone, but I'll bet a lot of it's not, knowing Notre Dame. So Mike, here's a question. You know, Big Ten, we always hear, it comes down to the presidents and chancellors. It's not about the ADs. But where does academics come in? You know, you think the Big Ten's going to be snobbish on this side? You think they're going to, you know, they're not going to reach out to an Arkansas, as an example, ever? I mean, I don't think. But what do you think? Do you think academics is still important here?
They like to give lip service to that and, you know, talk about that. And certainly with the additions of USC and UCLA, you're not losing anything academically at all. I mean, those respected institutions. You know, if you go beyond that, I think that they like to maintain that image of you know, high academic standards, which is fine. But I mean, I think in the world in which we live, economics trumps all. So,
yeah,
you know. What did Nebraska add academically to the Big Ten?
Exclusive from their state point, you know, exclusive research dollars within their state, you know, and a lot of research dollars relative to their size. I mean, that's part of it. you know, and frankly, UCLA, you know, I mean, suddenly you have another great medical school in the Big Ten. Nebraska's medical school, although people laugh about it, it's actually not rated that badly. So, and they do a lot of, you know, stuff there and research. And unlike, you know, certain states, that's pretty much the only game in town for you know, high-grade university medical centers in their state. So that's probably part of what they bring to it. But, I mean, it, you know, and it depends on this. You know, when you think of Big Ten, you think of big state schools, Minnesota, Ohio State, or even smaller state schools. But on that score, UCF is as big as any of those. I mean, UCF is, I believe, still the second largest university in the country. So that's going to be a player down the road. But right now, it's probably still not. I don't know. Indy, you're in a – I mean, Mike was in more of a political side of things when in academically speaking. You were in more the tech side and the computer side. What's the Big Ten? I mean, does the Big Ten have a great reputation in that, you know, regard, or is that kind of, you think that's the same, like sort of like what Mike says, it's really just going more on the economic side of it?
No, I think it definitely has to do with the academics as well. Like, I know the Big Ten requires the Association of American Universities. I believe
yep.
all are members. Is that correct?
I thought at one point Nebraska was not, but now I'm also hearing that they have rejoined it. So I don't know. Just
yeah,
hard
okay.
to
yeah, I heard that too, but they might be in now.
That's one of the reasons I thought Stanford, we talked about this a few months back. But yeah, academics is definitely I believe it is a factor for the Big Ten.
Yeah. I think so too. I mean, frankly, I mean, it's, and on that score, though, you know, we always laugh about the SEC and to a lesser degree the Big 12. Those schools are getting better. I mean, the reputations of those schools are getting better. And like in the SEC, Florida's as good a school as any, pretty much as good a school as any school in the Big 10, as an example. In the ACC, you have some great schools, which is why I wonder if that's, you know, going to be a problem. So start here. You know, we're talking about what happens. Who starts getting left out at all? Do you think we're going to have schools that start getting left out, like major Power Five schools that are going to start getting left out?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the, you know, you got the Big 12, the ACC, and the Pac-12. They're, you know, somebody's getting left out, or, you know, they're, it's kind of a panic mode of where this ends up. But I'm sure they'll align somewhere. You know, as it sorts out. But, yeah, somebody's going to get left out for sure. That's why people move so quickly with this.
Yeah. One fear is that from some people is that an Iowa or Iowa State, you know, as a smaller state, as a smaller, you know, smaller schools within their conference could get left out. Like that the Big Ten overall alliance, the bigger schools of the Big Ten could say, well, why are we including an Iowa? You think that ever kind of – and let's take a different school. Let's say Northwestern. You think that ever happens? You think there are any schools within the Big Ten that could get bounced out?
I don't think the legacy schools. I think they're probably safe. I mean, but, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I think that's right, too. I agree. I mean, if you're like the founding schools, which Iowa is, Northwestern, I don't know how long Northwestern, but it goes back to the, you know, turn of the century, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, I just don't see – it would be unprecedented to just eject people, school, especially that have been there for so long, out of conference.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think – I think we're heading toward mega conferences, which means that subdivisions become like the old conferences.
hope we don't eject Nebraska.
Yeah. So what happens – I mean, if let's say that we start – okay – We're all on a zero birthday this year. We're all on a birthday ending in zero. So you think by our next zero birthday, we actually have the super conferences in place 10 years from now?
Yeah, I do. I think in 10 years. I mean, I don't know exactly how it'll look, but I just think it's the impetus is just heading that way. The whole momentum. It's also a way, if you do it, to bring to leave fewer schools out in the cold, so to speak. I think that's
good
where
point.
We're heading. But I think it's a little further off, you know, 8-10 years.
Indy, how about you? What's your idea? Well, how would you want super conferences if we're talking in the next 10 years? How would you go?
I think it's within 5 years we'll have. I think the big the Big Ten and the SEC are the big two right now, and then the others will fill in to some degree. But I think that happens within 5 years as to what that looks like. It's going to continue to evolve. I mean, who could have projected this 10 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I think this surprises me more than way more than the Oklahoma Texas to the SEC. And just I didn't think this kind of thing is just. I mean, I figured we were going to be going toward the ACC, but it's natural, I guess, to expand. But you know, I mean, the only thing left is finding a Hawaii school that might. You know. Oh, and here's another thing. You guys think we'll ever start playing Canadian colleges? Think that's ever going to happen?
Do they have football programs that are comparable to what we have here?
Well, it's you know, there's I imagine they play Canadian rules, but I don't know about the colleges. Colleges might not play the same CFL rules. I don't know. But do you think that? I mean, there aren't a lot of Canadian football players in college football yet. I mean, there have been some, but think about it as we, as we evolve toward, think about it, what it would do for our, for Big Ten hockey, as an example, to bring in Canadian schools. I just wonder if that's the kind of thing that we might ever see is, getting more continental versus just, dividing it at, well, better not, because then in soccer we'll all suck because all the Southern Mexico schools would kill us, so forget that idea. So, okay, whatever. So, okay, so in your, Indy, put together your ideal setup of, say, three super conferences or four. Would you want?
Well, I'm just pro Big Ten, pro Iowa, but I think we're looking at right now the Big Two. And then the third, I don't know if it'll be – I think the problem right now, you kind of hit on it earlier, is the Big 12 went and added a bunch of teams. It's diluted. So if you have 24 teams in your conference, how often are you playing them? Yeah. It's the strength of the programs you have in there. That's a factor. I think the Big Ten's got a great setup. The SEC has a great setup. Oklahoma and Texas is a huge get. That kind of started the domino effect with –
yeah.
The Big Ten had to do something. They tried to do the alliance, and then, now we get two big programs. But I think everybody else is behind. It's just going to be interesting to see how it plays out, and that I don't think anybody knows at this point.
Yeah. Mike, if you were going to set up a set of super conferences, how would you do it? You do three, you do four?
Well, yeah, I mean, I see more like – three, like Indy Hawk says, a Big Ten and the SEC are in a good position, and then sort of a conference of the rest that'll probably have a lot of the Big 12 and Pac and sort of the remnants of the Pac 10 after Southern Cal, UCLA in it. But it could go to four because then there's going to be a question of the ACC. Although I think eventually the SEC will pick the ones they want. Whether it goes to 24 team conferences or 20, I don't know. If it goes to 24, you probably wouldn't have more than three. If it's at 20, conceivably you could have four. But I think that it's so hard to predict what's going to happen. I mean, like you were saying, who kind of would have thought we're where we're at here now, even 5 years ago? But maybe we just didn't have enough imagination.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the other thing that somebody has put forward is that periodic realignments might just become the norm. In other words, like in European soccer and English soccer, I guess, there is that sort of a club can move up and down within the same tier, and sort of seeing that might be the kind of thing that happens in our, in here. So maybe Iowa works its way up to the top tier. And then, maybe a couple bad years, someone else works their way up. I don't know. I mean, that's just a thought, but it's not an invalid one. I mean, I just wonder if that's something that we're going to be looking at. I mean, obviously, travel time is going to figure into some of it, but obviously it's not important enough because they've done it at this point. So, I mean, I don't know. That's the other problem, though. I mean, how does a team go from, how does Rutgers play UCLA, and maintain the academic side of it and all the timing and all that? I just don't know. So There's
1 billion reasons that can work, Hank.
Yeah, you're
exactly,
right.
Exactly. The money's becoming so big that it can handle everything.
So what happens to the Big Ten, you know, because Big Ten deal's being negotiated now. What happens? What do you think? I mean, how much does it go up? Mike, what would you say?
Well, if they're looking around $1 billion now, maybe to $1 billion, two or three maybe with Southern Cal UCLA. But, yeah, I think that there could be some renegotiation because of this. I mean, I think that the $1 billion that we were hearing about with Fox, and now if NBC's coming into the picture, it's going to drive the bidding up. And I do, you know, what I have read is that NBC does really want to make a play for the Big Ten. And they're one of the big dogs that could really challenge Fox if they really go all in. So it can only be good for the Big Ten as far as getting more revenues.
Yeah. Andy, what do you think? How big do you think it's going to get?
I think it's going to get huge. I mean, our Amazon TV,
yep.
Apple, you know, all of those TV, they're selling individual games. You know, okay, hey, you want Notre Dame USC, we'll bid that out individually. So
right.
They'll just get deep.
I'm bringing T. Bodie back in, even though he's been given feedback on his phone's been given feedback. But I'm bringing him in because there's a person that's in some of the chat rooms that we've been on before, Hawkeye chat rooms, a guy named O'Keefe for Prez. And he has said, O'Keefe for Prez said like a year or two ago, said, no way, you'll never see the Amazons and them get into it because they don't own the content. And that's obviously not true because Amazon has been doing lots of sports in the last year or two. You know, they've got their NFL thing. So
yeah, they have Thursday Night Football, don't they?
Yeah. So
that's what I want to pipe in on, Hank.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that you're going to see BTN expand to BTN2. Just like the ESPN channels have had multiple channels this goes back to when you were talking about Notre Dame, but by having more schools and more content and more things to cover, you got that many more sports that you're covering too.
Yeah.
You might see
a Big Ten women's channel. You might see a Big Ten women's channel, for instance.
Yeah. I was going to say, you put women's lacrosse, you put it on a BTN too, you know, and then you're, you know, respecting women's sports.
The other question comes up, is everyone going to continue to play 10 conference games, or will they expand all 12 games to conference-only games when you have 16, 20, 24 teams? If they're only playing the 10 conference games, you're only talking about traveling five times. And if you're traveling, maybe only two of those are cross-country. So the travel, they're saying, is going to be pretty minimal compared to, you know, what – it's not going to be that much different than what you see today.
Yeah. I mean, West Virginia already has a travel.
Now, basketball
already has
a lot
travel
different.
Schedule.
Yeah.
But you know, there's ways they can do it. I mean, you're just not – the thing is, you're not going to see games – I assume you're not going to see it like Iowa has to fly out to UCLA and then, you know, for a Saturday game, and then for a Tuesday or Wednesday game, they've got to fly back to Rutgers. I think the league is going to be – there's going to have to be enough.
Exactly. They're not going
to. There's going to be a logistical aspect to it. There's going to have to be. So,
absolutely.
What about the Hawaii schools? I mean, Hawaii's never been huge, but Hawaii's had decent teams in the past. But are the Hawaii schools going to just be further relegated, you think?
Bring back Jim Jones or whatever his name was.
Yeah, June Jones.
Well, besides Hawaii itself, what are the other schools out there?
Yeah, for nothing. Nothing. Chaminade in basketball one year, but
yeah, that's true.
I'm really thinking. The more I'm thinking about this, it's the ACC that I'm wondering about because, you know, some of those schools, you know, and Mike's right, and Indy's right. You know, there is an academic aspect to it, at least in the Big Ten, and it's not all about wanting Harvard, but it's the Big Ten does want. You know, they have criteria. They want a land grant or state university. They want a major research university. By the way, neither of those is met by Notre Dame. Notre Dame is not a big research university, and it is not obviously not a state university. Now, people always argue Northwestern, but Northwestern is much like Stanford in that although it's a private school, it has a ton of corporate and public partnerships and endowments and research, you know, programs. I just don't see, I mean, that's my one thing about Notre Dame. I think, you know, you're bringing it in, but I think they're the ones that are going to have to change the most. I mean, you know, the average Big Ten school won't have to adapt to it, but Notre Dame sure will. So I just don't know if that necessarily is a natural fit. But who knows? Maybe they're going to be. Maybe they'll pitch their wet, you know, their tent with the ACC. But I don't see how that's going to help the ACC in the long run. So, do you think we're going to see any kind of regional aspect to it? Are we just totally obliterating the regional aspect, Mike? Do you think?
No, I don't. I don't think so, because if you do go to this, you know, mega conference type setup, 2024 teams, what's going to happen is you're going to get these divisions or pods or, you know, however it's going to be, that will go back to like more like what the old conference system used to be. In other words, you get a 2014 Big Ten, right? You're going to have a division or a pod that maybe has the six teams that, you know, Iowa would play every year. You know, within the subdivisions of the mega conferences, you would sort of have, you know, a lot of the traditional games that you had for 100 years.
Yeah. Andy, what's your thought? I mean, you think that same kind of thing, or do you think there's other ways they can go about it?
I think that's the argument for divisions. That's the one thing I would like about divisions is you could keep your rivalries, and if you haven't played somebody for a while, it's probably because you haven't advanced. And I don't know, I assume the Big Ten could do a couple rounds of the Big Ten tournament in football, maybe the four conferences advance. I don't know, does anybody else do that?
What, have multiple rounds in a football tournament?
Right, four teams.
Oh, not yet. Oh,
yeah,
does.
So it's like you had four subdivisions with a champion in all four would play conference.
There's another way they could do it. You could have three super conferences, but you could have, quote-unquote, a Big Ten pod within it. You know what I mean? I mean, there would that be that way? You know, you could have like a, you know, very that could be done year to year even, but – you know, I think it's going to come down to one. The college football playoff is I think we're looking at 32 teams before this all is said and done. I think that's the only way you can satisfy them. And I also think, other than the major bowls, is there any way the minor bowls survive? Indy, do you think?
You said 32 team playoff in football?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about 32 teams.
That would be a lot. I could see 16, definitely 8. But I think that's where the major bowls go, is if you go to, you know, 8, 16 teams. Let's say you did 16 teams, you play one in early December, you know, and try to, you know, play that out. That would be where your major bowls or your minor bowls could come in as those first rounds.
Yeah. That's the only – I mean, I don't see them – no, but, I mean, isn't the FCS, isn't that a 32-team playoff? Or is it 24?
Well, they have. You remember, there's three below Division One or whatever that we call it.
Right.
The FCS. The FCS. Then there's like three or four divisions, right? So
yeah.
I don't think each division has 32 teams in a playoff. I think it's more like 16.
Okay, I thought FCS for some reason had 32.
But then you have four different divisions, right? So you have you know,
well, and I guess the question becomes, well, really, what happens to the rest of the Power Five, or not the Power Five? What happens to the rest of FBS? I mean, because you're looking at basically 60 schools that are going to be part of this. What happens to the rest of FBS? Does that go into a separate division? Does that maybe get the minor bowls, and that's what they're gunning for?
I think that's where you're heading, because I think you're going to have like a super division one, which will be these 60 or to maybe to 72 teams in three mega conferences. And then everybody that is in that was old division one, you know, the Mountain West schools, the WAC schools, the, you know, maybe some of the ACC, some of the Pac-12, you know, maybe Iowa State, just kidding. End up in a lesser division one, but they would be kind of separate. I think that's kind of the where it's headed.
Okay, so Mike, since you mentioned it, you mentioned Iowa State, and your brother is an Iowa State fan. When's the last Iowa State game? When can we look? What should we target as it'll be the last one?
I hadn't thought of that. That's a good question. I think a lot of Iowa fans look. I think it's a good rivalry. I look forward to it every year.
Yep.
Sometimes more than other years, but I don't know. I mean, I think if you tell me how things really will shake out, then maybe I can tell you. But I see that maybe that rivalry is in jeopardy a little bit in the coming years.
What do you think, Indy?
I don't think so. I think that'll continue on. Like, I'm assuming everybody will have one or two non-conference games at least versus just pure conference schedule. So I would think that would continue. Definitely for all the reasons you guys said.
Yeah, T. Bodie, what are you thinking? T. Bodie, are you still on? I've got you logged in, so he may not hear us. He may be. T. Bodie,
yeah,
there,
I got
buddy?
You. I have you muted.
Oh, okay.
I'm here, but I will pass on this particular subject because I wasn't listening.
Just asking. Iowa State. Is this doomed or is this continue?
I think that they'll still strive to keep rivalries like that alive because there's a lot of interconference, you know, and the border, you know, war between Oklahoma and Texas or what is that Bedlam? Is that Oklahoma State and Texas or is that Oklahoma, Texas?
Oklahoma, Texas
is
Red River.
Florida, Florida State, Miami, and whoever they play. You know, there's a lot of rivalries outside of conferences.
Yeah.
I think Iowa State stays. Now, that being said, Iowa's kind of wanted out of that pact for a while. I think it's one of those things that, maybe they use that as an excuse to move on.
I disagree on that part. I think there are a lot of fans that have wanted out of it. I don't think the schools want out of it. I think both schools want it. I mean, I've never heard anything from whether it be Gary Barta or back to Bob Bowlsby or Kirk Ferentz or anybody. I never heard anybody that said, God, we want out of this thing.
I haven't heard anything recently.
No, I haven't.
And I agree. I like it.
I think it's a matter
of
the
pressure. And remember, they're both state schools, right? Funded by the state government. There's a lot of political pressure that they play. That's what started the series back up again in the 70s. They hadn't played for 40-something years. And, there's a lot of political pressure. So there would be a lot of political consequences if Iowa just junked it, I think. So
Hey, we got a caller on the line. I'm going to bring them in, guys, and see if they got something to say. Maybe I can't. I'm trying to, but trying to bring in another call. Here we go. Okay, 458, you're on the line. You got something on this?
Hey, babies. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay. I took my magnesium citrate, and it's kicking in.
Okay. So I take it you don't have anything to say in the college football landscape.
Not particularly. I was just calling because I'm full of shit, and so are you.
Oh, okay. Have a good night. Well, guys, we get a crank caller here on our college football.
I wonder what she thought was full of shit.
I don't know. Must have been probably me. Vito said he has to leave. He has to take off. So, Vito says good night.
Before we got on.
No. That call just popped in. So it was just.
Okay.
I thought it was going to be. We've had crank calls in the past. We had the guy that would always say, "Oh, one more thing," and he says, "Can you lick your own?" You know what? So that was. Boy says it wasn't him or her. So I know Boy, his wife also logs in sometimes under that handle. So. But no, it was not, and I assume it wasn't Alaskan. So I don't know. That was good. That could have gotten good, but you never know. You never know who's going to call. The magnesium citrate. You guys know what that is? Anybody?
I don't know.
I would imagine T. Bodie might have had it.
It might have something to do with laxative.
Yeah, sort of. When I had a hernia surgery years ago, they gave me, they told me to drink magnesium citrate, stop eating the night before, and then drink magnesium citrate to start get things moving a bit. It's not like the bowel prep for a colonoscopy, but it did say, you know, drink this and don't eat. That could have liquids or whatever, but you know, that was it. So anyway, learn something new every day. So evidently she we don't get to hear her weigh in on the Iowa State rivalry, unfortunately, but you know, we can't have everything. So hey, so anybody know any good tailgate places that we're going to be? I mean, is USC, UCLA? I don't see them as tailgate places per se. Do you either you guys know, or any of you guys know?
You got a tailgate out at the Rose Bowl. Out at the Rose Bowl.
Well, that's the Rose Bowl, though. But, you know, playing USC in September isn't exactly the Rose Bowl. I mean, you know, Rose Bowl, you know, thing. But
we would have our own section, though.
Yeah. From what I understand, the Rose Bowl's not, I mean, like in and around the Rose Bowl's not necessarily the best neighborhood, I have heard, but I don't really know. I mean, that's one trip, I believe it or not, have that.
I lived out in that area for about a year. I was and used to drive through there. Dude, it's kind of cool though to just be tooling down the highway. Rose Bowl exit. North,
yeah.
You know, and Pasadena. I think you're right. I think overall that's not necessarily the best area, but it's, you know, it's very scenic there.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Most football stadiums in, you know, I mean, you go into certain areas, most of those places, it's not the best neighborhood, you know, three blocks from the stadium. I mean, I remember the old Chicago Stadium.
Kaminsky.
Man, they practically had to, I mean, they almost instituted concealed carry just for anybody going in there, you know. I mean, it was so dangerous. So, you know, who knows? Final thoughts. You know, what does this affect? Do you think this was really, I should say, fine. Was this really about football, or do you think it's about the other sports as well, Mike? What do you think?
No, I think it's about the other sports too. But football is the primary driver. Let's be realistic about it. But this has been a momentous week in college football, and it's not me saying it. It's a lot of people. You know, this Feinbaum thought it was even bigger deal than Oklahoma, Texas, which from an SEC guy, I think it's because the implications. You see the implications of this as having a real knock-on effect that we can't predict right now. Well, we can sort of predict, but who knows, right?
Yeah, Indy, what do you think? You think this is pretty much football-driven, or do you think they're really looking at some of the other sports as well?
Oh, I think it's both because, I mean, you're talking major dollars here. I mean, Iowa should be putting some money into their baseball program. I know they're looking at building a new stadium, but, I mean, you're talking a lot of money. And, you know, the Big Ten footprint now has 5 of the 7 largest metro areas. That's incredible.
Yeah,
so
it is.
There's going to be a lot of benefit. Iowa is in just a wonderful position to benefit from this as a university. So I think everybody wins.
Yeah, I mean, we're literally the first Power 5 conference now that covers all 4 time zones in the continental U.S., you know? So, I mean, that's huge. I mean, that's a major, major thing. Here's where I think about it. Basketball, obviously, UCLA's tradition. Baseball, UCLA and USC are usually, you know, pretty good in there. Track and field, the Big Ten might, you know, have to kick up its game, so to speak. Recruiting, though, who do you think, I mean, Ohio State can recruit anywhere, Michigan to some degree as well, but do you think Iowa is going to suddenly be pulling all kinds of California recruits? Mike, do you think that's realistic?
I don't know if they'll be pulling all kinds, but I do think it will increase the reach there because being in the same conference is going to make a lot of the, you know, maybe the California people look toward the big other Big Ten schools, so there's some opportunity there, but I don't think it's going to be an avalanche. I think Southern Cal, particularly, he's being in the Big Ten as a way, and UCLA probably too, but Southern Cal's got the bigger aspirations of getting their back to their glory years, and you know when they used to just get the pick of everybody they wanted out there. None of those schools need to recruit. I mean, it is so rich, the talent out in the LA area, that they can just recruit right there if they can get people to come there like Southern Cal used to.
Yeah. Andy, what do you think? You think this is going to make a, you know, I mean, do you think this is a big recruiting thing, or do you think it's more about TV sets?
I do. I think it's a big recruiting thing for, you know, a school like Iowa, other schools in the Big Ten. Like Ohio State, they go into California, they get some kids, but it's a hotbed of talent that now, you know, you can go to a Big Ten school, you know, maybe you're a high three or low four star recruit. You can go to Iowa, for example, or one of the other schools, and you still have a local game, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a year. So
yeah,
I think
yeah.
It's a huge opportunity. We got to get, you know, hopefully we've got somebody out there to help with recruiting. It doesn't just happen overnight, but definitely should be a boom.
You know, we were talking about the Iowa-Iowa State rivalry. I'll tell you a rivalry I bet that dies, unless the Super Conference. I'll bet Oklahoma-Oklahoma State dies. Because I, you know, yeah. That tradition, you know, that was a one where supposedly yep. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State were supposed to be a package deal, and obviously Oklahoma State was not. So I'll bet that one dies. So you think Lincoln Riley is regretting this? Indy, you think?
I don't know. I mean, he's hopefully he sees it as a challenge. I mean, I seriously do. I would like to see USC come back. I mean, I go back to when I was, you're talking about Ohio State, Michigan. You know, as a kid growing up, I'd watch that game. I'd watch USC, Notre Dame every year. You know,
yeah.
Anthony
yep.
Davis,
yep.
Ricky Bell, all those tailbacks, Charles White. I
yep.
just love that game. So I'd like to see yeah. them actually come back to that level.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
you know,
I think that's true too.
Yeah, Michael. I mean, if Mike, do you? I mean, if you're, I guess think of it this way, Mike and Mike, because you're, I know you're not in Iowa. Neither of you are in Iowa now, but I mean, you grew up there, Mike. Could you see Iowa kids that are going to suddenly, you know, saying, well, gosh, now USC's an option? I mean, when we lose kids, we usually lose them to the Alabamas. You think we're going to start losing kids to USC, UCLA? Type deal? You think that's an issue?
I don't see that right now because, I mean, it could. Who knows? But I do. But on the Lincoln Riley thing, you know, that's one of the things Feinbaum was so big on this. He says because it's coupled with the fact that he thinks Lincoln Riley is going to be, you know, a real godsend to Southern Cal, and then with the Big Ten thrown in because he's an outstanding recruiter, and this helps particularly Southern Cal. And UCLA maybe to a lesser extent, and Southern Cal, though, to get really back to the top level that they used to be.
Yeah. Okay, now here's the other elephant in the room that's going to have to be fixed, I think. I'm not sure how you fix NIL because that barn door is wide, you know, wide open. But the transfer portal, some kind of deal. Mike, you think you can fix the transfer portal?
I don't know if it'll happen. I hope it does. I think we need to go back to the old way because I think right now, it's you know, we've got the NIL. It's going to stay, but this transfer portal I think has done more damage than the NIL ever can or would do. You know, and I think by the way, some of the schools you least expect seem to be doing okay with the NIL. I, for instance, Iowa getting Proctor. I was reading Caden Proctor. That basically Iowa was telling him he can make $1 million in NIL if he comes to Iowa. Now, I don't know, A, if that's true, or B, if they really told him that. I mean that influenced him to, you know, but I don't see how it couldn't. But if Iowa can do it, you know, because how did we get him from Alabama, you know? It was just a few years ago when they had this Pierce Barker
yeah.
or whatever. Yeah, Pierce Barker. And he junked out. He actually committed out, and then he went to Alabama as soon as they showed interest. And that didn't happen here. So
yeah. Andy, what do you think? You think
crazy
it's you think transfer portal's fixable?
I don't know. It's a mess right now. I know the NIL. I saw a headline today. Iowa football players unveiled new NIL club that offers fans access. I don't know what that's all about, but it looks like Iowa is trying to deal with, you know, some of that. So I mean, it sounds like it's a big deal. $199 access.
Yeah, theoretically, it's the schools are supposed to have no involvement, but you know, that's
right.
Part of the problem. I mean, I think the problem is, you know, the transfer portal went from you know, sitting a year and the argument being, well, coaches can leave and everything, to suddenly kids leaving, you know, you have literal free agency. I mean, an NFL player doesn't have that kind of free agency. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what, you know, I've talked about it and with T. Bodie, you know, I think there's got to be some kind of thing, you know, like a Charlie Jones. I don't know. You know, he was technically a graduate transfer, so he could have gone anyway. The deadline didn't apply to him. But I mean, how do you explain a Charlie Jones in India? That's what I wanted to ask you, Indy. You're in Indiana. You probably see some local articles more than the rest of us would pertaining to that. Has there been anything as to what happened with that from an Indiana Purdue perspective?
No, I haven't heard much about that, you know, as far as Charlie Jones going to Purdue, Tom.
Yeah. I just wondered if there's been anything local scuttlebutt about what happened.
No, not really. I've not heard much here from the media here. We get more IU than we do Purdue.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I mean, any of you guys have a thought on that, on what the heck happened with Charlie Jones? How did that happen? I don't get it. We didn't lose Keyshawn Johnson here. We didn't lose Randy Moss, but we lost, you know, our best return guy and a guy who was going to see the field a lot as a receiver. I just don't understand it at all. I really don't.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure why Purdue's that much more attractive either. You know, I mean, he's going to be competing against a lot of other receivers there, but
we have a lot of young talent on receiver.
Yeah, we have a lot of, you're saying we do, Indy? You're saying we have a lot of young talent at receiver?
Yeah. I think he probably saw a need there. They probably went after him hard. I didn't read that much into it, but we've got some serious talent in our young wide receivers right now.
Yeah.
Probably more so than the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah. So, cool. Okay. Well, guys, I've got one final rant on the Highland Park shooting, so I'm going to let you guys go. I'm just going to click you off of I'm going to put you on mute. Stay on, obviously, if you want, or Indy, hang up, but stay in the chat room. So, I want to thank you guys for being on. T. Bodie, I know you had to mute at times because of your feedback on your phone. I suggest Dollar Tree probably sells phones now. Just kidding. I got to get a new phone myself. But thanks for being on. We'll talk more. We're about a month away from our hard football discussions, so we've got to get to those. But thanks for being on, guys, and we will talk more on our text and all that stuff later. So thanks for being on.
Thanks.
Talk to you all later. Okay, folks. I wanted to touch on this a final time. I did not want to be dealing with talking about shootings. As I said before, I don't want to glorify shooters and all that stuff. But, you know, we had another shooting on the 4th of July in Highland Park, Illinois. Now, for those that don't know, Highland Park is a North Shore suburb of Chicago. When I say North Shore, it may not be on the shore, but it's a North Shore area suburb. I don't want to say predominantly Jewish, but it does have a significant Jewish population. I don't know if that was what factored into it. But, you know, at first it was this random thing, and they were saying, you know, we got nothing. Somehow they were saying we have nothing on them. But first, we've got at least weeks of an online history. We do have an uncle that said he had no idea. The guy wore women's clothing to help his escape. And you can see photos of that on the internet. But somehow, law enforcement was saying we have nothing on him. Quote, nothing on him. Now, wait a second. What? They have already accessed and assessed his online history. There are several indicators that this guy ain't right. They can't detect a motive? Really? And yet they've taken down YouTube videos, and now we are hearing that dad helped him get knives and an FOID card, which is required in Illinois. So, okay. Again, like other shootings, something doesn't add up. And I have a theory. It's sort of an addition to my previous theories on some of these shootings. Some may not like it. Remember, it's just a theory. Okay, I think here's one. You know, we've always said this. As legislation comes up, you suddenly have these. Or these things are used to drum up support for legislation. And I think that's partly where we're going. I remember, Roe versus Wade was basically removed in the terms of it didn't outlaw all abortion, but it said that abortion is not a federal guaranteed constitutional right. And guess what? The big left can use abortion as a sort of a population control, but not really. especially when they're bringing people in from the you know, border countries. So that doesn't wash. I think what's happened, I think the deep state and big left were willing to sacrifice abortion for gun control. And I think this is a mechanism they're using to get it. Polls show that abortion is practically a non-issue for most voters. When I say non-issue, it's not in their top five. However, polls invariably show some willingness by enough people to cave on gun rights after these shootings. Every time. I mean, historically, polls do show not a shift toward we must have gun control, but they do show a shift in what people are willing to accept after these. So why not continue at a minimum to allow them to make the leap that big left and the deep state have partaken, far-fetched as some people might think? Look, remember, several abortion clinic bombings that were perpetrated by people who were not pro-life, but rather were people who wanted to bring sympathy to the cause. Take as an example these morons recently who went to a painting and to protest oil, glued themselves to a painting, I believe in the Louvre. I could be wrong on that. But they glued themselves to the painting. That's what these people are, or that's the kind of people they use. Look, a culture, or rather a subculture, that has no problem with abortion in the name of free choice isn't going to have much problem with killings, gun control. Hell, there are still people advocating for our disgusting COVID control protocols and tactics. So no, don't be shocked when we have these shootings followed by convoluted and conflicting post-event information. And now, of course, we should be ready for another round of fanaticism from Big Left and, of course, some spine wobbling from the GOP and what I would call the soft right. So there you have it. We have another shooting, and the calls are going to be coming. Simple as that. Don't give in. Remember, it is a guaranteed right under the Second Amendment. It is a part of our Bill of Rights, which even one of my most lefty friends says the Bill of Rights is sacrosanct. So don't give in. You know, sports is important, politics is important, but constitutional rights are most important. Being here, I want to thank Alaskan Boyd, Vito, Indy Hawk, Boye, Mike, Sue, T. Bodie, Indy Hawk on the phones, even our entertaining caller who had a, I don't know what where she was going with that. In the meantime, have a great weekend. I hope you all had a good 4th. Stay safe, but remember, have fun as well. Have a good night, folks, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.